Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
FreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And you know who the real dedicated listeners are to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, because well, basically they're already in the chat room just as the show starts. There's about 10 of them, I think, who are just religious. and then that normally doubles and triples in the first 15 minutes of the show as the other people who aren't quite so committed in the mental hospital sense of the word with the straitjackets. I can just imagine people almost like the Matrix, you know, plugged into the Vinnie Eastwood Show with like tubes up their nose and then in their ears and through their eye sockets and stuff like that, like on Event Horizon. But anyway, today we have something a little bit more positive, and I think the term kick-ass is actually appropriate here. Ian Jacklin from Canada. Ian, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
Mm-mm. Now, tell us about your kick-ass self and what it is you do.
Yeah, I guess that's appropriate. I used to actually literally kick ass when I was the Canadian and North American pro kickboxing champion. I was ranked number 2 in the world. This is way before the MMA came around. But so I've just been in the martial arts and fighting my whole life. And back when I was fighting, I was kind of fighting against the government as well, because they had banned my sport in Ontario, Canada, where I'm from. Dukku Kim was a pro boxer, and he got killed by the hands of Boom Boom Mancini, and they buried kickboxing but kept boxing alive because it was such a large sport, it was too hard to bury. So from a pretty young age, because I started fighting pro when I was 16, I was a Canadian champ by 18, and so, you know, before 20 I was already, you know, getting the media involved and showing them the injustices that I was experiencing and not able to have a fight in my hometown. I always had to go down to the States to fight in Detroit, New York, you know. So basically, I just kind of did then what I'm doing now with the whole cancer thing. I switched my fight after I retired from fighting at 26 because I was getting into the martial art movies. I did a number of low-budget karate films back in the 90s. I was in Kickboxer 3. I played, usually played the bad guy. Ring of Fire 2 with Don the Dragon Wilson. I starred in a couple where I got to be the good guy in Expert Weapon and Deathmatch. So any of you hardcore martial art fans out there may know some of these. But so I kind of hung up the gloves because I was getting paid more money and having more fun. and a lot less pain fighting on screen than I was in the ring. and via that, I kind of took acting like I did the martial arts. I studied very intensely method acting for a couple of years.
Well, hold on a second. Sure. Have you noticed that you always get paid more to do something fake than doing something that's real?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But it was kind of fun, too. And in the movies, you get the girl at the end, so...
Nice.
You can't complain about that. So basically, I trained method acting from Stanislavski, which that's where all the... I did the same thing with acting as I did fighting. You know, when I was fighting, I studied the greats, Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson. I was actually in the Lennox Lewis camp. I lived in London, England for half a year because his first pro fight after he won the gold in the Olympics was in my hometown. And they, his first, so he was training at my gym. And his trainer saw me, even though I was a kickboxer, he was like, damn, there's a white boy that can fight. We gotta take him back with us. So they took me to England with him. So, again, I just studied the greatest. If you want to be the greatest, you got to study the greatest. So when I got into acting, of course, I was studying Brando and Pacino, De Niro, I mean, all the tops, and went to the same type of schools they went to. The funny thing was they stopped putting me in films once I learned how to act, because at the end of the 90s, for some reason, the low-budget martial art genre just died. Like, Van Damme started it in the late 80s, and by the late 90s, it was done. So anybody that's ever seen me on a film out there, I didn't get to see that I did learn how to act in the end. And but I was into the entertainment industry full force at this point, and I wanted to learn how to make my own films, because while I was doing a play in Los Angeles, I met this girl I always had a crush on, and I knew her for about 6 years, because I also worked at the Roxbury, and for those that don't know, that'd be like the Studio 54 of the 90s. It was the most amazing happening nightclub in the world. So yeah, first night I was bodyguarding for, you know, Sinead O'Connor, Prince, Eddie Murphy, Madonna was always there. I mean, it was quite the scene. And I was always quite attracted to this one girl that would just kind of talk to me once in a while. Her name's Cynthia Brooks, J. Cynthia Brooks. And she ended up being in the same play with me 6 years later. And myself and the rest of the actors were out on break, you know, having a smoke break or whatever, chilling in between rehearsal times. And as actors are, they like to have the center attention. So they're all battling to see who could get the spotlight. And it's funny, they're quite entertaining. I'm more of a quiet kind of stay in the corner kind of guy. I was just trying to learn how to become a better actor so I could, you know, get more, get roles that paid more and were more, I don't know, it's just not so
challenging.
Yeah, good way of putting it. So, but out of the, right behind me, I hear this little whisper saying, I just cured myself of cancer. Ooh. And nobody else heard that, and I did not, and I'm not one to pipe down if I have something to say, so I said, whoa, what? What did you just say? And it was this gorgeous girl, Cynthia, that I was always crazy about. So I wasn't even nervous this time. Normally, I'd be nervous talking to her because I thought she was so pretty. But I was really interested. I said, you can't cure cancer. What are you talking about? And she goes, well, the UCLA doctors, you know, they say I'm a medical miracle. But I was given a year to live at terminal cervical cancer. And here it is 8 months later. And I'm cancer free. And I'm like, what? No way. And she said, yeah, and I didn't do any of the things they said. They said, you got to do chemo, radiation, and surgery. And she basically flipped them off and did her own holistic thing. And again, this is probably 12, 13 years ago, if not longer, before anybody knew anything about any of this natural healing, really. So it took me a while to actually truly believe her. We ended up dating, which was great. We're still great friends to this day. So I spent a lot of time with her, and I learned about holistic healing. She also got me into meditation and helped me to realize that we are mind, body, soul. We're not just physical beings. We're not, what's the saying? We are spirits having a human experience, not a spirit having a, or you know what I mean? I don't know if you heard. Yeah. But we're spirit. You can't deny that. You know, whether you're religious or not, if you're an atheist, it doesn't matter. You know there's more to life than just the third dimension.
Yeah, see, I think of it from the perspective as we're all that.
Yeah. So through her being my friend and stuff, she got me to this meditation center she was going to, which is based on the Essene meditation, the Essenes from, you know, back in the biblical days. And it's about everything that Einstein ever said. It's about energy. Everything's energy. Our thoughts are energy. And these kind of things that I was learning way back then have come out in recent projects, like What the Bleep Do We Know, The Secret, things like that. And it's kind of all somewhat similar. Basically, you're saying your mind has power. And there's a book out, too, called, it's not called The Power of Mind, it's called The Power of Intent. Because, I mean, a good way of proving this one is, like, well, if one guy believes in Buddha, and the other guy believes in Allah, and the other guy believes in Christ, and they all used it, and they healed themselves. And some people, there's many stories out there of people curing themselves of terminal diseases just with faith. And it just goes to show you, and the book was about this, it's called Power of Intent. There's something in the brain that can release its own things and take care of its own self. So that was a key note that I learned from Cynthia. And then also how she basically just did juicing all day long, juicing the anti-cancer type vegetables and staying away from sugar, basic diet like that. And again, this is just so many years ago. It's amazing to me. She's a very highly developed woman, you know, because not too many, to this day, I still tell people about this, and a lot of people don't believe me, unfortunately. But the good news is, thanks to films like, well, I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself. Because of this, I made a documentary. The acting thing was slowing down anyway. And I had been trying my hardest to get somebody to invest in making a documentary on how this is, because I started calling people from the internet. I'd get on the internet and I'd read other people's stories, how they cured themselves of cancer, because I thought maybe it was just a fluke that Cynthia did it or whatever. So I wanted to find out for sure, because it just really intrigued me that if she would have listened to her doctor, she would have been dead, but she didn't, and she's alive. So I'd search the internet. This is, again, this would be early 2000, I'd say. And I'd find somebody that said, oh, yeah, well, I cured myself of cancer, too. And I'd call them because I didn't want to just read things on the net, because anybody can post that stuff. And I'd get a voice behind it, and I could tell if they were sincere or not. And they were. They're like, oh, yeah, I did this. I did coffee enemas, and I did the juicing. And so when I believed it is when I said, holy, I got to do something about this. You know, why? I think because, you know, my mom, and this turned out to be a mistake, but I thought that cancer ran in my mom's family. I think maybe one person had it at one point. But anyway, so I grew up my whole life thinking, oh my God, what if my mom, you know, I was adopted. So, you know, my mom, what if she died? I don't know what I would do with cancer. So I was very passionate about finding about what would, if she ever got it or anybody I loved ever got it or myself, what would I do? And that's when I, you know, I did all the research and I tried to get, because I did 10 years in Hollywood and I knew people, I knew rich people, people that maybe $40,000, $50,000 would be a drop in the bucket to, you know, you and I like spending $20 on a burger and a beer or something. That's what $50,000 would be to them. And I couldn't get anybody to invest. It just blew my mind. And when I think back to those days, because I turned out to be right, you know, I don't know how many people I personally have helped cure themselves of cancer. I haven't kept, you know, it's kind of hard to keep track of that, but a lot.
It's like somebody with who's walking around with $1,000 in change in their pockets, and some bum reaches up and he says, "Can I have $1, please? Because I want something to eat." And just going, "Nah."
Yeah, I know. It's just, I couldn't understand it, man. It broke my heart. So finally I said, you know what? Screw all you. I'm going to do this myself, because this is when digital filmmaking was starting to kick in pretty big time. And now you don't have to be a millionaire to be a filmmaker. You just go yourself.
You don't even have to have enough money for breakfast to be a filmmaker these days.
Exactly. Yeah, you just go buy a mini DV tape instead of the eggs. So we got ourselves my roommate, his mom invested a little bit she basically asked him if he wanted to have a house or start a business, and he said start a house. So we got some basic digital equipment. We had a Canon, I think it was called XL1. This is an SD before HD even came out. And we, of course, got a Mac and Final Cut Pro, which is a great editing system. I mean, it's for just recently, up until just recently, it was competing with the professional stuff at the studios like Avid's and stuff. So I got that when it first came out, and I still have the very first book. The book for the instruction book for Final Cut Pro back in the day was just one book, maybe an inch and a half thick. Now it's so big they don't even put it in book form anymore. It's just on, you know, online. But anyway, I stuck my head in that book until I learned how to edit myself, and I grabbed the camera. And at the time, we were living in Brooklyn, New York, in Williamsburg, which is the artist district. And we were in this huge artist building where everybody else in there were artists. They're painters, sculptors, whatever. So I just grabbed the camera, and I remember the very first time I walked into somebody's place. They were friends of ours. We kind of knew. And I heard them rehearsing, their band rehearsing. I just walked in with the camera on and started shooting them. They didn't mind. They thought it was cool. So, and then they got to get videos put up on YouTube and stuff. So that I was so upset. It was kind of like back when I was fighting. I couldn't fight in my hometown. You know, I would go to the press, the papers, the TV, and try and get the truth out to people. Well, I did the same thing with the cancer. And I taught myself how to shoot. And I did two rockumentaries, one in New York City on the struggling artist trying to make it there, and one in upstate New York called Small Town Bands, where, same thing, but they're from the small town trying to make it. And that let me hone my skills well enough to the point where I could shoot and edit. And so I said, okay, no, still nobody's giving me any money. I'm going to just start shooting. So I found out where the Cancer Control Society has their meeting every year. It's Labor Day weekend, beginning of September, end of summer. Lorraine Rosenthal, I think, is the lady that runs that. So I found out about this thing, and I knew there'd be a whole bunch of people in one spot that are in this area. And sure enough, I show up and I have my camera and I just started watching people and listening to them. And if I thought they were cool, I'd grab them and say, hey, can I have a quick interview with you? And at one point, I still can't believe I did this because I am kind of shy. I'm good with the fourth wall. Like we call that in acting where you've got, there's nobody there. There is no audience. You've got the right, the left, and the back, that's your wall in your world. But being in front of a crowd, I was kind of nervous. So, but they had this one section where they had people come up and say, it's a huge...
Oh, well, unfortunately, we're coming to break now, Ian. All right, well, we'll be back in just a few minutes with Ian Jacklin, ladies and gentlemen. You can check out his website, ianjacklin.com. That's JACKLIN.com, ianjacklin.com. We'll be right back in just a few minutes. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
Bonkers.
Gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about waking up just to go back to sleep on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. It's a little inside joke, ladies and gentlemen, because I got up at, who were the guys? Let me see if I can find their website. CriticalMassRadio.co.uk. I want to give the boys a plug. Over there, Paul Vickers and another guy, I forget his name now anyway. I got up at 5 a.m. this morning, ladies and gentlemen, to be on an interview with Paul Vickers, only to find out that the host of the show, Paul Vickers, wasn't even there. So me, as the guest, showing up with no host, had absolutely nothing to do. And I was up about 3-4 hours earlier than I normally did, and I went to bed a heck of a lot earlier too. You know, it was kind of frustrating. And I was supposed to do 2 hours with him from 5 a.m. till 7 a.m. and then at 7:30 a.m. till 9:30 a.m. I was going to be with another guy, Nusku or whatever. So understandably, he cancelled on me too without telling me. getting up at 5 a.m. having nothing to do until the show starts at 10 a.m. is a real, real pain in the bum sometimes. But hey, you gotta laugh, mate. And this happened, and in fact, this will be some advice for budding radio show hosts out there. Make sure you turn up for your own show, okay? It sounds simple, but believe me, it's a lot harder than it sounds. Also, do what you say you're going to do, okay? Be there for people, okay? If they get confused or you get confused or anything like that, the first thing you do, instead of blaming the other person, is actually to accept responsibility for whatever part you've played, even if it's a very minor part in the screw-up or anything like that. Just apologize and move on. And if somebody needs to be rescheduled, you don't ask them or give them a time frame, like between Tuesday and Saturday, maybe you can come on the show or blah, 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 blah. Give them a very specific time frame, okay, like 5 till 7 central, and give them a very specific day, like, for example, today, Thursday the 21st of June, right? And this is how I did it with Ian, because I think it was, what, 2 days ago Ian was supposed to be on the show, and we'd gotten the show times a bit mixed up. So he arrived just when the show finished, and so I was just like, okay, well, conveniently, we have a two-hour slot in 2 days' time. And so Ian, wasn't that difficult once we knew what time it was and easy to slot in, wasn't it?
Yeah, once I got the time zones down, I didn't realize you were in New Zealand, wow. But yeah, and I apologize to you, and I'd also like to apologize to any of my fans that may have tuned in, because I was promoting the heck out of that show, and I built my whole day around it. I sat down on my computer, I'm ready to rock and roll, and then I see your email saying, "Where are you?" I'm like, "Oh, I missed it." No. Yeah. But thank God, I really appreciate you having me on again, and I do believe there's no accidents or mistakes or coincidences, and maybe somebody out there listening today needs to hear some of this information, because I'm kind of blabbing about myself and my background at first, but I'm going to get into some of the things that you should be doing if you have cancer right now, in my humble opinion of 12 years of researching this. So,
yeah.
I'm glad.
I mean, ladies and gentlemen, how many else people out there have got 12 years of researching how to cure cancer? Anybody raising your hands? No? Okay. How many of you have cured cancer out there? Anybody? No? Raising your hand? No. Okay. Well, then listen up and absorb some decent information from somebody who has done that work. Okay, it's the thing. And you said something very poignant towards the beginning of the show, Ian, is if you want to do something, like if you want to be the best at something or anything, you study the people who are the best. I usually go one further, and instead of just studying the people who are the best, I meet them, talk to them, and hang out with them as often as I can, and you absorb it as well.
Absolutely. That's it's funny, the anti-alternative medicine people, the Western medicine, the big pharma, basically, based medicine, which has ruined our medical system, they always try and disrespect or put down the holistic ways by saying, well, where's your, that's just anecdotal, you know, where's your scientific studies and blah, blah, blah. Well, me, again, like, as a fighter, I thought, okay, who's a champion right now? It's Lennox Lewis, or it's Mike Tyson, or it's, you know, and I did, like you said, I got to meet Lennox Lewis and train with him for a little while. So when I was doing the cancer research, I thought, what do I want to read scientific studies that were funded by the drug companies that are trying to get this drug passed when I know that even if it wasn't proven, which it has been proven, that a lot of those results are tainted. I just know human beings. And of course they're going to, and look at how many people died from, you know, I don't know, was it Vioxx or something. Every drug they pass and then take away, it was originally passed in the first place. So, and who knows how many people die because of it. So I just did what I normally do and find the people that did it. I don't care what your study says. Show me someone. And that's the thing. I think it was Suzanne Somers or somebody, when she was writing her book, she said, you know, I basically, somebody questioned me and I called. They said, do you know anybody that's cured cancer? Can you call anybody? And she said, yes. And she within like a half hour, she had a page of people that had done it. And if you go to your oncologist, you try and find, you get him to give you a list of a page of people that have cured themselves, you know, good luck. So that's what I did. I basically went, and I even did a poll, because I have not a huge millions and millions of people that follow me, but I have a decent fan base because of the kickboxing championships, the movie star roles as a martial artist, and now as the documentary filmmaker. And I did a poll, and everybody said they would rather listen to the person that cured themselves than read some sort of scientific study put out by probably a pharmaceutical company. So that's the key right there.
And there's also another element to it is when you go from, say, having a normal conversation with a normal person who knows how to speak and they're good at speaking English and all of that kind of stuff, and then you go and perhaps read in English textbooks or anything like that, you notice a very distinct difference between the two. Number one, you can understand what the person who's speaking English is talking, because he's not talking about it with a million extra words that don't need to be there in a convoluted fashion. It's the same way that medical textbooks and everything are done, so that only those who are dense enough can understand them. And all of those people who are normal, who would understand reason and logic and things of that nature, get lost. And so as a result, the vast majority of the population doesn't benefit from medical information or any type of higher education for that matter, because it's not done in a way that's comprehensible to the average person.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. It's a no-brainer to me, you know. And when it comes to getting kicked or punched in the head by somebody else, I'm not going by stuff that's written down. I'm going by people that know how to get out of the way of those punches and kicks and know how to deliver them back. So I went to people. So I was already convinced, because my girlfriend at the time, Cynthia Brooks, cured herself of terminal cervical cancer. And then I did my own research and found a whole bunch of other people just like her. So I'm already convinced. I thought, how do I bring this message to the world since you're not going to get it from your oncologist? And I thought, well, I'll just stick the camera in everybody's faces that did it and let their eyes tell the story, because that's a beautiful thing about, even better than books, I think, is video, TV, movies, whatever, is you're looking at that person right in their eyes as they're coming from the bottom of their heart and explaining to you that I had this, this, and this, I was given this long to live, I did this, this, and this, and I'm still here 20 years later. That, boom, there you go, there's somebody to look up to and follow and find out what they did. So as I was speaking before the break, I was at this stage where it'd be, you know, luckily I didn't have cancer, but if I did, I'd be doing the same thing. I thought, well, how do I learn? So I went to the Cancer Control Society here in Los Angeles, and the first year I went alone, just with a camera on my back, and I was very shy, and I didn't get much done. The second year, I had met up with Jessica Biscardi, who ended up being my executive producer, and she had breast cancer. I met her at that cancer control seminar because she had breast cancer, and she was also an agent here in Hollywood and knew the business a bit, so she wanted to help out. So while she was curing herself of cancer, she was also helping me make this film, and I had Jim Hawks from out in the desert. He was here. He's an old friend of mine, and he helped me shoot the camera so I could focus more on the interview. So it was basically using myself, or myself and a camera guy would be there. And I got up in front of the whole audience there at the Cancer Control People Center, and it was about probably 1,000 people or so, maybe. And as I was trying to explain, I'm kind of shy, even though I'm a champion fighter and an actor. This is when you got a thousand people in front of you, got to address. And I wasn't even invited up to address. Like, only people that got in front of this crowd were people that were invited. But I snuck in the line. For people, because there was one section where people were allowed to get up and tell their quick little story on how they cured themselves. So, you know, some lady would be in front of me saying, oh, yeah, I cured myself doing this, this, and this, and everybody applaud, and the next person would go, next person. So I snuck in at the back of the line, and I got up there, and it's still on YouTube to this day. I said, I don't have cancer. I never have, you know, I probably never will. But and then I went into a little spiel about how my girlfriend cured herself, and how I was making a documentary, because I thought everybody should hear about it. And I told the group, if anybody out there has cancer or has a story, come and see me after I get off the stage, and we'll interview you. And boom, it just started rolling from then. So I just kept picking people all in one spot. You know, this was a godsend, because for me, I'm a starving artist to this day. It's not like I ever made it big time. I may have started in a lot of movies, but they're low budget karate movies. I always had to have another job. So I was able to nail a whole bunch of people in one weekend. And then I just started editing it, putting it together, and then I moved to upstate New York, and when I was finishing up the editing, I got to the first cut, which no filmmaker in their right mind would ever put out their work before it was finally polished and just creme de la creme. Well, I didn't care what people thought of my filmmaking. I knew people needed to see the message, the information. So as soon as I got that first cut done, which, you know, in some instances, the camera fell over in the middle of the interview, but it didn't matter. You could still hear the people. And I had this friend, I lived in a small town called Horseheads, New York, upstate New York. It's by Elmira and Corning and Ithaca. And so we played the first cut at Heights Theater in Elmira Heights, New York. This would be about 96, I think. And then every Sunday, he would let me play it again. He didn't charge me anything, and he actually gave me the funds. He's a really nice guy to help maintain, because at the time, I was pumping gas for $6 an hour at the local quick fill. So every Sunday, we'd play it, and the next week, I'd come with a better version, and then a better version. We did that for months. And I thought, just in case there's one person out there that needs to know this, and wouldn't you know, just recently, if you could go to Amazon.com and look up iCureCancer.com, my film, and you look at the comments people have left, there's a comment there from somebody from that area that said, if it wasn't for Ian Jacklin and his work, my wife wouldn't be alive today. So, you know, I'm not saying that to boast or anything. I'm just saying my instincts were right. Get that film out right away. Even though people might think you suck as a filmmaker, you may save a life.
See, it's pretty obvious, though. I mean, if you've got life-saving information, what benefit do you think you're going to do people by keeping that information under wraps until it's perfectly presented? I say, basically, perfection is unobtainable, okay? You can get close to it, but I'm getting to the point where, basically, near enough is good enough. What are people waiting for? There's so many people out there who want to do their first thing ever, and they want to do it perfect, and they never get it done because they're setting themselves too high a benchmark.
Right, yeah. And you just, it's ego is a part of life. Everybody has it, and you just can't let any of that get in the way when it comes to life-saving information. Sure, if it was on kickboxing or dirt bike racing or you know, whatever, then you might want to have it all polished. But this, it wasn't about what it looked like, it was what you're going to hear. I think the best compliment I ever got about that film was, this could be a radio show, and I'd be just as riveted. And they were. Every time we screened that film at a theater, everybody stayed to the very end, and they would stay for the question and answers later. So that was how I got things started. And I never was able to get a distribution deal for it, because it was, even the final product is still pretty raw. Although I've been told that's kind of endearing about the project. You can tell it's made just on passion and love. And I wouldn't be surprised if someday it does get a distribution deal and gets out there. But for now, if anybody wants to see it, I basically show you what I learned as I went, how people cure themselves of cancer. And the number one rule is to stay away from your oncologist. And you, it's funny you say, I've got 12 years of experience. Well, you know what? You or anybody else can pretty much get online for one evening and become more knowledgeable than an oncologist when it comes to healing cancer. Because, and this is a great point that I always like to make, back in the early 1900s, Rockefeller and Carnegie, they owned the textbook companies and the pharmaceutical companies. And they realized that if they could get some people on the board of the schools, the universities that teach our doctors what to do, that would be a good thing for them. It would increase their profits. So that's exactly what they did. And skip forward to today, that's all we have is drugs, more or less, for our medical system. And this is how, I'll get into this later, but at first I didn't know any of this. My main question was, why if I go to my doctor, he's not going to tell me about Bloodroot or alkaline diet or Rife machine, you know, alternative methods that have proven to work?
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's like so many businesses are very anti-competitive. And what people forget is that the medical industry is also a business. And their competition is the people that will heal you instead of the people who will keep you sick for extended periods of time by selling you dangerous pharmaceutical drugs that don't make you any better but still keep you alive so you can keep paying the bills. We'll be right back after the break at the Knee Eastwood.
We're gonna make You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, welcome back.
Yeah.
It's the Rockefeller theme song.
We go brush our
teeth.
That's all part
you
of it.
You say something to me like, I don't want to be forcibly inoculated and sterilized against my will.
But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah, genocide's all right with me. It's business time.
Sorry.
Speaking of which, we were talking about the Rockefellers before we came out and the Carnegie Endowment Fund. Now, I was wondering, was Carnegie actually well endowed or not?
I don't know.
I mean, mate, I think he started up this whole endowment fund because he was trying to compensate for something personally.
It could be, I don't know. I think it probably was all about money, and that's unfortunately why it's ruined our medical system today. Oh, I mean, you go through, I'm going through this right now, actually. This is the first time it's hit home. And I always knew this day would come. I've talked to many of families and friends and people through cancer, but just recently, and I'm waiting to hear the results today on my nephew, but apparently he's got leukemia. And so luckily, his uncle is very schooled in this area, and I've already got on the horn with some pretty important people and learning about this leukemia. And here's what I found so far, and it's just horrifying to know what may lay ahead. Because this is going to be, I'm making iCureCancer.com part two right now. I'm kind of stymied again because I haven't gotten anybody to invest yet. So I've shot everything I can shoot around me, but in order for me to travel, I'm still waiting for somebody to invest. So if anybody out there knows of executive producers or money people that want to help out with a good cause, we're doing part two right now. And basically what I found out is that it's very normal for a child or an elderly person to get leukemia. And if you just leave it alone, it'll go through its own cycle. It's a 12-week cycle. Matter of fact, when leukemia shows up and they say, oh, you got leukemia, it's already over. You're in the healing stage, I found. And back in the day, before the big drug companies got involved and realized, oh, boy, cha-ching, here we go. Here's at least $250,000 for us. They would just leave people alone for about 3 months and retest them, and it would be gone a lot of the times. And so what I'm doing now is we're waiting to find out what kind it is. And I've already found there's a shake that can be made by Hannah Kroger. She's passed on now, not too long ago, but she was a huge alternative healer over the years, and she had this one shake that's basically just different juices and some organic eggs that you drink all day, every day for 7-8 days, and from what I understand, leukemia is gone. Whereas, like I said, if you leave it alone, it'll probably be gone anyway. The extra white blood cells or whatever they're seeing and why it looks out of whack is because the body's healing itself. It's compensating for whatever it was. And so that's kind of what I'm going through right now and hoping that I will be able to do some kind of intervention with the alternative. And what I was trying to say about part two is my main point is going to be, I think the world needs to know that right now, if you're a child, you have a baby or a toddler or anywhere up to 18 years of age, in America anyway, and in Canada, that you have to do whatever they say. If your baby's got brain cancer, see, now I know from my research, the first thing I would do if my baby had brain cancer would be go to Dr. Brzezinski. And if anybody hasn't seen that film yet, you have to. Just Google Dr. Brzezinski. He's done amazing work with brain cancer, because basically there's two types of people, he says. There's people that get cancer, people that don't. The people that don't have peptides, certain peptides in their system that keeps them from ever getting cancer. So he said, well, let's take those peptides out of the people that have them and put them into the people that don't. And it worked. So, and then he's learned how to do it synthetically, so you don't even have to have a donor anymore. And he was curing people like crazy. And, of course, the FDA, AMA don't like this, so they've had him in court since I don't know how long. And the movie explains all that about him. And basically, they start the film off with a sheriff. And he's got this beautiful little blonde daughter next to him. And he's going on about the story and you kind of think he's talking about her at first. Then you find out this is the twin. The other one died because she had to go. The only way you're allowed to get this treatment from Dr. Brzezinski is if your baby has already gone through chemo radiation surgery, which is called a burn baby. Because they're so burnt out, nothing's working, they send you home to let her die and get the affairs together. Well, at that stage, they took her to Dr. Brzezinski, and he ended up curing her of the cancer. There's no cancer left whatsoever, but she died from the radiation poisoning. And it's just such a sad, moving moment. And that's if they would have gave that baby to him first, before the chemo radiation surgery, she would have been cured immediately. And that's the thing with all these any of the alternative trials that are being allowed, they're only allowed after you've done the chemo radiation surgery, because they think that's the only way to cure cancer, which is total nonsense. That's the last thing you do. The last thing I would ever do if I had cancer would be chemo radiation surgery.
Let's look at it this way. I mean, if you want to maintain your health, do you walk into a nuclear reactor? No. Right. Do you slice yourself with a sharp object? No. Do you ingest incredibly dangerous poisons? No. So what are the three things that the medical industry proposes to do for you if you're unhealthy? Pump you up with dangerous chemicals, irradiate you, or slice you.
Exactly. It kills your immune system. That's all you need. So anybody out there right now, the first thing you should do is what I would do if you have cancer, is you get on an alkaline diet, because Otto Warburg won that prize. What do you call that? Not the Peace Prize. What's the Nobel Prize or whatever?
It's like a church that you can't hear very well because it's got Nobel.
Okay, I'll remember that. I was flake on that one when I'm on the air. But he won the prize back in the early 1900s. He basically figured out cancer. And that's that cancer can't live in an alkaline system. So if you get your pH level, which your average pH of the average person is 6.4, if it gets down around 5, you probably got cancer. I think once it hits 4, you're dead. So if you've got cancer, that's another way of finding out if you even have cancer, is get pH strips from your local pharmacy or something. Test the saliva under your tongue in the morning and see what it reads. And if it's 5, then you might want to look into it. If it's 6.4 or so, your average of 7, that's good. And Dr. Bernardo, who's one of the stars of my film, he healed more people than anybody I think I've ever met. And that was his main thing, is you get them on an alkaline diet, raise their pH level to 7.2, 7.4, cancer can't live, and it dies. So, and that's basically what my ex-girlfriend did, Cynthia, and she didn't even know that's what she was doing. But she just got on juicing, get rid of all sugar, and bring the alkaline level up, and boom, the cancer can't survive. So that's the first thing I tell people to do. There's another great website aside from mine. I've got iCureCancer.com that you can get a hold of the movie there. You can watch a lot of the movie for free in different clips throughout that. There's a lot of free information there. And also, I tell people, my friend, his name is Webster Kerr. He's got a website called CancerTutor.com. CancerTutor.com. This guy's a genius. I mean, a rocket scientist, literally, I think, or close to anyway. And he's researched over the years and has this website, CancerTutor.com. You can look up any cancer you may have, and he will have two or three different protocols that you could try that are alternative, and they're amazing. So that's the second thing I would do if I had cancer right now. A, get on the alkaline diet, which includes lemon juice and water, by the way, and everybody should drink this. Nobody should be on sodas or all those sugary juices.
Ian, it's funny you should mention that, because we were just in those last few days, a friend of mine, I was going over to his place, and he told me he was sick, so I brought round five lemons or something like that, and he was like looking really, really bad, mate. So I was just like, chop the lemon in half for it, squeeze the whole thing into his glass of water, and I say, scale this, mate, and there's another four of them here, and I want you to make sure that you're drinking all of those squeezed into water within the next day or two. Next time I saw him a few days later, much better.
Yeah, that's good. And I can add to that recipe. What I do is you put in some apple cider vinegar, raw organic apple cider vinegar, 2 tablespoons, half a lemon, a pinch of cayenne pepper, depending on how hot you can take it. The hotter the better, but it's hot. And raw organic honey. And you mix all that up and you pound that back. And even if you are sick and you got to go to work that day, because I've done it a bunch of times, it seems to work and it knocks it out of your system. And also, if you go to either ianjacklin.com or icurecancer.com, which also has my blog, you know, icurecancer.com blog, it's got a number of supplements that I recommend and take myself. And one of the greatest ones, a good natural antibiotic, is oregano oil. Oregano oil. Add that. Take that when you're sick, and it knocks it out as well.
Well, and it just belied the fact that there are 1,000 ways to keep yourself healthy and only one way to make yourself sick. Go into the doctor and get taken his advice.
Exactly.
I mean, we live in an upside-down, topsy-turvy world, which is great because it means we can learn a hell of a lot of things. Basically, that's the only reason why we're able to learn so much and everything like that is because there's people like Ian out there, ladies and gentlemen, who are actually putting that information so that out for free so that people can come, consume it, save their own lives. Doctors don't do that. They charge you admission fees, and they try to get you out of there as quickly as possible so that they can get another admission fee as quickly as possible too, because they got massive debts to pay off, unlike all of us, who know that the truth is valuable in and of itself. We'll be right back after the break. 218-339-8525. Number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, Fukushima irradiated with love. My very special guest is Ian Jacklin, coming at us live, and also wanted to open up the lines. Do you want to take some callers, Ian, or we're kind of not finished talking yet, are we?
For sure, you can get that going, and I'll just, there's a few important points I kind of want to bring up real quick to help people out as well. So,
well, before you make those points, I'll just give out the call in number, ladies and gentlemen, so you can call in and hold on, and then we'll get to you in due course. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. So call on in, and we'll get to you very shortly. So sorry, go ahead, Ian.
Okay. Well, I'd like to preface this by saying, you know, I don't truly believe that doctors are bad people at all. I just think a lot of them are just so intelligent. They sometimes don't think outside of the box. They're so busy having to learn the garbage that basically Big Pharma is making them learn to teach their young. It's basically our young is being taught garbage because of Big Pharma runs. It's the fox guarding the hen house is what it is, especially when it comes. And the FDA and the AMA are all in cahoots with Big Pharma running the show. And then if you want to step above that, which I think this radio station talks about, I'm sure, is the Illuminati, the elite, but we won't even get into that one for now. But basically, that's it. It's the 1% running the world and doing whatever they want, and they don't care about you or your health. They just care about their profits. That being said, here's a few little tips. Again, if you women should never get mammograms, in my opinion. If you're going to get anything, get a thermogram, because mammograms, think about a grape, and if that grape has poison in it and you squish it, what's going to happen? The juice is going to come out, it's going to flow. Well, that's what happens in mammograms. If you do have a tumor and it's cancerous and they squish it, number one, they're giving you radiation with that x-ray. Number two, if you just broke the tissue, now you've got cancer cells in your bloodstream flowing, and it'll settle somewhere else. So get thermograms. But another way to find out if you are acidic, you need to know if you're acidic, because you don't die of cancer, you die of acidosis. And you do that by checking your pH level, and you can get pH strips at your local pharmacy or health food store. In the morning, you wake up, you suck the slime or scum out of your mouth, you know, and suck some new saliva from under your tongue. Test it and see what it reads. 6.4 is average. What you want is, especially if you have cancer, is to get it up to 7, 7.2, 7.4, because cancer can't live in an alkaline environment. But if it is 5, I'd definitely be concerned, because you may have cancer. And here's another funny little test that I hear is very accurate. You take a pregnancy test. Man or woman, doesn't matter. It's even better if you're a man, because you know you can't be pregnant. But if you're a woman and you know you can't be pregnant, but it shows you're pregnant, then you might want to look into it too, because, and I don't know the science behind it, I'm just a layman, and I learn in layman's terms from scientists, so I can explain it to other people. So those are two little notes right there. If you ever get skin cancer, oh my God, this one kills me, because I've had people die that I've known, because they didn't listen. Skin cancer is pretty much 100% curable if you stay away from your oncologist. Your oncologist is going to cut it off, but he does not get the roots. The roots stay in there, and then they come back. I was at a restaurant one night, and it was a party for somebody, and somebody introduced me to somebody that just had skin cancer removed from their nose, and I was like, oh, man, okay, here's what you got to do. You got to call my buddy here down in Mexico and get this taken care of properly, because they didn't get the roots. And so I gave him all the information. He sounded gung-ho about it. Then I get a call a year later. He says, Ian, I never took your advice. You're right. It's spread. It's all through my lymph nodes and everywhere. And I said, well, it's going to be a lot harder to treat now than it would have been then, but here's what you do. And I told him what to do, but it didn't work. It was too late. It was already through the system. But if he would have done this in the first place, there's a thing. American Indians used to use it. It's called bloodroot. It's a black salve. You just spread that on your cancer area, and you'll know if it's cancerous or not right away, because it starts hurting. If it hurts, that means this is good, you've got cancer, and it's going to draw it out. And it take a few days, and it's going to be very painful. A lot of times they recommend you do work with a doctor on this for pain control, because it's very, very painful. It's literally ripping, pulling, drawing the cancer out deep from within your body. But once it goes away, you have to, you know, because there'll be a hole. There'll be a big hole there where if the tumor came out or this cancer came out, you keep it packed with Vaseline for a few weeks. It goes away. You got a little scar. Boom. You don't have to worry about it anymore. So there's another tip that I would tell all females. Stay away from mammograms. Get thermograms. And if anybody gets some kind of skin cancer, use...
I wanted to inject something here, because it's funny that we're talking about this now, because last night I was thinking about breast cancer. You know, I don't know why, you know, maybe I'm just male and I think about breasts a lot, but I was just thinking, like, what's something that causes cancer? Radiation. What's some of the most sensitive tissue on the body? The breasts. So in order to prevent cancer, you're putting the most sensitive part of your body into a machine that pumps it with radiation.
Exactly. And they're doing that on purpose. They want repeat customers. Well, they want customers in the first place. That's why they set up vans in the ghetto and in poor late neighborhoods around here and offer free breast screening when they know
They have those here in New Zealand too. Yeah,
they do it because they know that in the poor areas they're on government programs, so they will be covered medically, and they'll be, oh, you got a tumor, we got it. Then boom, you're worth at least $250,000 right away. And then the way they treat it with the radiation and the chemo, you're going to be a repeat customer, because if you've noticed, usually cancer, even people that get in remission, it usually comes back. It's because they don't get it all out, and the treatments they use causes cancer, spreads cancer. So there's another point. And the thing
and that's another thing. If you're treating your, if you're trying to find out whether or not you've got prostate cancer, guys, do you put your testicles in a radiation machine to figure it out? No, you don't.
I know, it's sad. But so, and the other thing is surgery. Now, one of the stars of my film, IQCancer.com, is Burton Goldberg, who's known as the voice of alternative medicine. He wrote a definitive guide, alternative medicine, definitive guide to alternative cancer healing years and years and years ago. That's the first book I read when I found out my girlfriend cured herself of cancer. And he's a very knowledgeable guy. And I've actually got a YouTube video up on YouTube about him basically stating the same thing. No mammograms and no biopsies. Because if they go and cut into your flesh and it turns out to be cancerous, you just open Pandora's box. The cancer cells are now in your blood system. They're going to float around and come up somewhere else. And that's why, how many times you see that? Somebody, oh, well, I'm in remission for breast cancer, but now I got lung cancer or liver cancer. It's because it's in the system. They don't know. And there are ways of doing surgery without that happening. You have to encapsulate the tumors. And it's hard. You'd be hard-pressed to find somebody in America that knows how to do that. But if they can do that, cut off the blood supply and get the tumor out safely, I think I can't remember what it's called, some kind of enzyme. I'm not the doctor. I'm the filmmaker that interview people to do this. So be very careful when it comes to that. There's Dr. Wallach. I wanted to mention really quick, Dr. Joel Wallach. He wrote a book called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. And this guy, he's a cool guy. He's in my film. He used to be a veterinarian. And his job was to keep the livestock alive. And so they could, you know, make money off them. And how do you do that? Well, you make sure they're healthy. So he invented feed pellets, what the animals eat. They had to have the 90 essential nutrients, you know, vitamins and minerals. And then he became a physician and decided to do that for human beings. And he's got a product line called Youngevity. And so he's done that, where you can get multivitamin. And it's liquid, so it assimilates better. It's all natural. And on top of that, he learn from the Otto Warburg about the alkalinity. With the best way of doing that is through essential fatty acids, EFAs. Now, you cannot use fish oils, especially now since Fukushima. But in general, it's such a hard process for them to make a good fish oil that won't go rancid on the shelf, etc. You're just better off staying away from that and getting a vegan type of essential fatty acid. And again,
the best one would probably be hemp oil.
I haven't
hemp seed oil, I mean.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I haven't researched that for me to actually comment on it. But I know, you know, primrose evening oil and different ones like that. As long as it's vegan and all natural, you know. But that was Otto. Brian Peskin wrote a book explaining it's called The Hidden Story of Cancer by Brian Peskin. Great book if you want to learn about cancer. And he basically takes Otto Warburg's science and applies it to this day and age, and how treating cancer you're very successful with it if you, again, oxygenate your cells, which you can do through EFAs. So that's key right there. Let's see who else. Have you heard of new German medicine over there? German new medicine.
No.
It's Dr. Hamer. He, back in the day, and this is interesting because anybody that, again, knows that we are spirits having a human experience will attest to it, that almost all cancers, if not all, come from some kind of trauma in your life. How many times does somebody lose their wife or go through a nasty divorce or their child dies or lose their career, and then a few months later, boom, they got breast cancer or they got, you know, testicular cancer or something? There's supposedly a connection there. And that's what this the German New Medicine kind of explains. He lost his son was murdered by accident or something. And not too long after that, he developed cancer. So he started studying this phenomenon. And every single patient he ever had were in the same bout. They had something horrible happen to him for the cancer. So that's if you want to go to Ilse Dora, is the lady that's been helping me with my nephew and the leukemia. Her website is newmedicine.ca, and it's all about this Hamer's work. And so that's an important note to get out there to people as well, because you really have to address your mind, your body, your soul. You can't just take every single vitamin on earth and do the intravenous high-dose vitamin C and with the DMSO and all these things. But
I have a perfect anecdote to actually corroborate that. My father, he was going to David Holden. He's probably... basically, he's New Zealand's number one naturopath, okay? You can't say that he cures cancer because he'll get arrested, right?
Yeah.
But he does. And my dad went to him, and his cancer, sure enough, went into remission, but it wasn't disappearing altogether. So he went back in, and David Holden told him that he had to forgive basically come to terms with what happened between him and my mum. And yeah. He refused to do that, flew into a rage, and died a few months later after finishing his bucket list and then leaving us all without him. And it just goes to show you very, very straight in your face that your emotions can kill you.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's funny. I was having a conversation with my nephew. Now, mind you, he's 12 years old. And I know these things, but he's a 12-year-old. How do you talk to him? So I tried to explain to him. I said, I know there's certain things that have happened recently that have made you very sad and lonely, right? Like, you don't like where you're at right now, right? He's like, right. I go, okay, well, that's probably why you're probably kind of sick right now. So all you got to do is when you start feeling really down and low, just remember about Uncle. So you're going to think to yourself, you're going to come visit him in California someday. Someday you're going to have your own apartment. Someday you're going to have your own life, and all this will be behind you. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That's the best way I could put it to a 12-year-old. So, because I'm trying to get him to snip it in the bud, because here's what's going to happen, and I'll find out today after I get off the phone with you, where he's at, and if it's an acute leukemia or something, you know, and they want to get him on chemo and stuff like that, you know, then that's going to be a new battle. And like I was saying, I'm making the main point of my film right now is we need to change the laws where parents can decide what kind of treatments their children get. It can't be forced on them to do chemo radiation surgery. It should be their decision. There's a kid named Abraham. We call him Wolf. I always forget the state that he's from. It's from, but he, his parents, when he was 14, had cancer. He did one chemo treatment, didn't like it, made him really sick, said, I want to try holistic. And they let him. But then, of course, knock, knock, knock on the door, child services, we're taking away your kid, you're going to jail. They can literally do that. So
you know, and that's the interesting thing. If you're up against the doctors and the establishment, if you try something that's holistic, they go ballistic.
Yeah, you're taking away their money. You're taking away their money, and they don't like
it. It's like the mafia, you know. It's just like, you're cutting in on our business, boyo.
Exactly. They're known as the medical mafia. What's sad is a lot of the practitioners don't know it, but their bosses do, which is Big Pharma, and they don't care about anybody. Again, they're the Illuminati. They're scum of the earth. So anyway, this Abraham kid, the parents fought. It was horrible. It broke up their marriage. They lost their business. They just horrible tragedy. As if it wasn't bad enough, their kid's dealing with cancer. Now they got to go and go through all this. But they won, and now there's a law in that state called Abraham's Law, where a 14-year-old can now make his own decisions. He doesn't have to wait till he's 18 if he's of sound mind and somewhat intelligent.
But I think that might be a bit of a slippery slope, though, because now they're doing that in New Zealand for vaccines, and they're saying that if you are, I think, over 10 years old or something like that, you can decide to vaccinate yourself. And what the government's doing is they're starting up a government department of people that are going to go onto Facebook to find young kids and tell them and convince them to take vaccines and not tell their parents specifically.
It's just pathetic. That's another thing. My dog's not really in that fight about the vaccines, but I post a lot about it because it's all a sham too. It's the elite. They want to keep their money, which is most of it's in Big Pharma and Big Oil.
And when you look into vaccines and things of that nature, you find out that they've actually got cancer viruses in them. And surprise, surprise, we're all got cancer.
That's their investment in you. They're injecting you with something that 10, 20 years down the line, they're going to be able to cash in because you're going to get cancer, you're going to get this or that. Look at the rate of autism in children. If you look at the charts, this kills me. Anybody that's pro-vaccination, I just say, look at the dates.
Well, it's like... it's almost like they're treating us as if we're a clam. They put a tiny little grain of sand inside us and keep us in a farm, and eventually that little grain of sand through our body will turn into a great pearl that they can snatch and harvest off us and make a hell of a lot of money. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back after the break. Gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live. And also, if you go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/quotes.html, you'll notice if you listen to the show for a while that I come up with some really amazing analogies a lot of the time. And the one that I just did before coming off the break, I thought was actually quite impressive. And I astound myself all the time. I'm constantly surprising myself how awesome I am. The medical industry treats us as though we're clams. The vaccine is a grain of sand that they inject in our body, and our body later turns it into a pearl that they can harvest and make a hell of a lot of money.
Exactly. That's brilliant, bro. Brilliant.
Mm. And now the art of analogies, ladies and gentlemen, is so that you you are demonstrating that you understand what's actually going on by relating it to something else, like macro to micro sort of thing, as above, so below. That's why analogies are good at helping people to understand situations, and also it's basically evidence that you comprehend what's being done by seeing the same mechanism elsewhere, okay? Cells and atoms have the same structure, okay? Your human body and your brain cells and the universe, the actual picture of the universe. Some guy actually tried to say what the picture of the universe looked like, and it looked exactly like a close up of a human brain cell. Everything's exactly the same. It's just different areas of it. And if you recognize the connections and the parameters between them, your comprehension of how the world really works will greatly improve.
Yep, exactly.
Idea. Would we want to get into that thing that I posted in here from Wendy Kay in Venice?
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that. I'm glad she brought that up. It's true. Definitely nobody should be drinking out of plastic anymore. It's proven. And I forget the name of the documentary right now, but it's about how, like, I think it's estrogen releases or something it messes with in our newborns. And I don't know if you've noticed that over there, but I've noticed it here, that a lot of our young, the babies today being born, they're growing, the boys are growing up very effeminate, if not gay, and the girls are very, very developed for their age. I mean, my ex-girlfriend's daughter was, I think she got her period at 9 or 10, and I don't think that used to happen till you're about 15 years ago. And now it's having the same effect on our boys and our girls. It's making them way more feminine. And a lot of that is attributed, from what I understand, to the plastic in the bottle. So nobody should be drinking plastic water bottles anymore. I heard that should become passe, as did having a cigarette in your hand. You know, if you see somebody with a plastic bottle, it's like, oh, I guess they don't know yet.
But you know what's funny is that if I were to smoke a cigarette, I at least know that what I'm smoking is a poison for me. But right. Whereas the vast majority of the time, somebody will hold a burger, somebody will hold a soft drink, somebody will hold a vaccine, somebody will hold a pharmaceutical drug, somebody will be holding a jar of Corexit 9500, and they have no idea that it's a poison.
Right, Right. Well, what to do about this, what I recommend, what I do myself, is there's a number of great water machines on the market today. There's a lot of that aren't so great, so you kind of got to do your research. The one I use, it's by Water Revolution, and it basically it purifies the water by ROing it first. Reverse osmosis is very important. I don't know about over there, but here in our hospitals, if a nurse drops a bottle of pills, she just throws them down the toilet. And so when you consider how many hospitals there are in America and all the drugs that are being put into our sewer systems, aside from the old saying, I remember when I was a kid, every time you drink a glass of water, it's already been drank like seven times before, which is kind of nasty. But so the point is, though, if you're going to drink water from your home, you make sure you RO it first, reverse osmosis. It kills everything. It basically makes it like distilled water, and then it runs it through. This particular model, Water Revolution, runs it through a remineralization process, so it's as if it's spring water that was natural, and it's all natural process. It's not an electric machine, and it remineralizes it. It alkalizes it, which brings the pH level up, and ionizes it, so it draws the toxins out of your system. And the one I'm talking about goes for about $1,000. You can pay up to $4,000 for models that don't do the same amount of work, but that's one way. Otherwise, I would say drink out of a well if you can find a well, or a good reputable spring water place. And those plastic bottles are different. It's the clear plastic you got to worry about. The ones that come in the blue plastic bottles, from what I understand, are okay. But that's very important, and make sure you add lemon to it. And I use stevia to sweeten. The stevia is the only sweetener on the planet that I know of that's not bad for you, including sugar even. It's a very good, and you don't need much of it, but it sweetens it. So I drink lemon juice water with a little stevia. It tastes like lemonade, and it's alkalizing my system as I drink it.
That was another thing I wanted to know, is that basically everything that the New World Order puts out that's supposed to be healthy for us is actually dangerous for us, and basically the only way to ever oppose them with anything is indeed to make sure that you do the direct opposite of whatever they tell you. So, for instance, if they give you an artificial sweetener to help you lose weight, what it's going to do is it's going to mimic sugar in your body so that when you have that sugar, your body processes the sweetness, but it doesn't get the calories, and it starts to crave the calories, and it makes you fatter. Other than that, it'll just, you know, help you to go blind and damage your brain cells and do all these other things. Because, well, basically, name me one rat that survived the testing of aspartame in the 80s. You're the rats, ladies and gentlemen.
That's so true. And I belong to a group online that's pretty cool. It's called the Red Pill of Truth, and they're very similar, their views to like yours and I. And I wanted to get into that real quick, because I was asleep. I had my head in the sand. I was a sheeple, and I didn't even know what a sheeple was. That's how asleep I was. But I make this documentary, and I'm from Canada. I was raised in a decent, you know, I don't want to say Christian home, because it wasn't forced down our throats, but we have the good type morals, good ethics and stuff. And I believe everybody to be good. So when I found out that cancer was curable, I was just devastated. I couldn't believe it, that the powers that be would purposely give us the wrong treatments to fatten their pockets and to kill us off. I just couldn't believe it. And so that's I learned that through finding out that it was Carnegie and Rockefeller, the Illuminati, scum that they are, that ruined our medical system by making it pharmaceutical based. And then from there, my awake friend said, hey, if this guy gets this, maybe he'll get 911 was an inside job. And they battled with me for months. I was like, no, you guys are conspiracy freaks, whatever. That's stupid. Our government would never do that to us. But they made me read the articles. They made me watch the videos. And finally, I was like, oh my God, it was an inside job. It wasn't the Muslims. It was, you know, I'm not going to get into it right now, but I know who it was. And I went to a major depression for about 2 weeks after that, when I realized the reality of the world today.
Oh, we all went through that.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think I'm now kind of coming to a conclusion on about what to do or feel about this. And that's basically just to realize, okay, so just don't be one of those people. If they are trying to reduce the population and they're doing a good job of it, just don't be one of them. And then maybe you'll be one of the ones that make it through because you didn't rely on your doctor. You didn't rely on your leaders. You did your own research, and you deserve to live. You deserve to for your genes to be passed on. And maybe that's what they're doing. They're weeding out the herd, thinning out the herd, you know?
So. Well, it's just basically eugenics, okay? And one needs to comprehend the tree of eugenics, that it's basically... Eugenics is the root system, and almost everything in politics, media, the medical industry, and what have you, have formed this kind of box. It's the eugenics box, and we're all currently living inside that box, both mentally and physically. If you can think outside the box in any part of that those particular industries, whether that be the medical, the media, or the politicians, if you can see through any one of them, it means you're actually capable of realizing that there is a box, that there is something to wake up to in its entirety.
Right, right.
That's why when you find out one part of the conspiracy, you know, the new world order and what have you, whether that be the pharmaceuticals, whether that be 9/11 or anything like that, it leads to everything else. Right. But the problem is some people, they almost get complacent. They get to a point where they think that they've got enough information to act and base their entire lives on. Whereas I'm acting under the assumption that I will never have enough information to know everything that's going on. In fact, my personal belief is anybody who claims to know everything knows bugger all.
Right, yeah, and hence the saying, you know, careful once you go down that rabbit hole, or again, the red pill, green pill thing. I mean, it's once you're onto it, you really, if you have any conscience or any heart whatsoever, I think you have to continue on the battle. And me as a warrior, obviously, you know, being in the martial arts my whole life, I want to go to war. I want to fight, you know, for the good of the people. And there's only so much you can do. My rage from finding out 911 was an inside job and it wasn't the Muslims at all that did it to us. I wanted to go to war myself. I wanted to pick up an M16 and go get the bad guys, go get the elite, get that 1% and take them out. But that's just not realistic. You can't do that. So all I've been able to do is educate myself, pass it on through social networks, and hopefully we raise the consciousness of the masses. And they start doing like you and I will do if one of us gets cancer. We know we're not going to listen to. We may use our oncologist for the test, but we're going to do our own thing. We're going to be our own doctors. And our genes are going to pass on. And eventually it may be our children's generation or the one after that. But the ones that are still around, hopefully will be able to get rid of that 1% that is ruining. Because there's an abundance for everybody on this planet. I truly believe it. I don't believe in this overpopulation thing. I mean, they can make water now. They got machines that make water from the air. You know, there's just so much science and technology out there that there's no reason why we can't all fit here. And the fat cats got to realize they got to share. The 1% to 99%, that's ridiculous. And I don't even know how they sleep at night, you know, knowing there's starving children.
Well, actually, here's how they sleep at night. And this is actually a very important thing for people to comprehend. When you go to sleep, Ian, do you fall straight asleep or do you go through a whole bunch of thinking before you actually drift off?
That's sleeping sometimes is an issue because I have all these thoughts in my head on how to fix what's wrong.
Okay. That means you're not a psychopath. Okay. Psychopaths go to sleep instantly because they have no emotions, they have no concerns, and it's usually the people who have big hearts and things like that, they're the ones who have the difficulty going to sleep at night. That's why you or many other people have said that exact same thing. I don't know how they sleep at night. It's because you're trying to think that if it's somebody like you who's doing that evil stuff that those psychopaths are doing, you wouldn't be able to sleep. Just remember that they're not like you. They don't care about human beings like you do.
Right. I always forget that part.
Well, you know, and it's the thing. You got to understand your enemy. And also you've got to know thyself as well and understand what the difference is. Because I was thinking about that series, Dexter. Have you ever heard of this? It's about a serial killer who basically only kills serial killers because his father, yeah, when he was a boy, taught him right from wrong. Even though he didn't feel what right was from wrong in an emotional sense, he knew intellectually right from wrong. So he wanted to kill people, but he knew that he wasn't able to kill innocent people because it was wrong. Even though if he did kill an innocent person, he wouldn't feel bad about it.
Right, yeah. I've heard of that. That's an interesting concept, too.
Now it brings about the whole idea of the good bad guy, right? And have you ever seen the movie The Chronicles of Riddick?
It rings a bell.
It's got Vin Diesel in it, and there's this army of necro warriors or whatever the heck. And basically, the main storyline is like this: the biggest, most evil army in the history of the universe is destroying and wiping out human civilization and colonies all over the galaxy, one at a time. And if they can't kill you, they'll convert you, and you'll become one of their slaves, one of their soldiers, sort of thing. And all of the soldiers of good in the galaxy were simply ill-equipped to fight an army of this sophistication, of this size, of this type of weaponry. The only hope was one of the worst convicted murdering psychopaths in the universe, named Riddick. And I was just thinking to myself, hold on a second. Is this what's going to happen with the New World Order puppetry and things like that? Will one of their very loyal, psychopathic scumbags have an intellectual moment that says to himself, you know what? I may not feel that what I'm doing is wrong, but I know that it is. And I know that unless I act and do the right thing, I won't be around to enjoy anything either. Right? I think that's a real possibility of being betrayed from the inside that the New World Order has to face. And again, we all have to face that, because there's so many people in the truth movement who basically haven't grown up, and they really need to, and understand who the real enemy is, because it's on the points you agree that you should come together and collaborate. The points that you disagree, you can leave them for another time, preferably a time when you're not both about to be exterminated by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery. We'll be right back. 218-339-8525.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command, because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust, in a holocaust, in a holocaust,
in a holocaust,
in a holocaust, in
a holocaust caused by vaccines and radiation combined. It's like the Captain Planet of scumbaggery. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And also we have Rick Simpson. Hopefully we'll be able to connect him in just a few seconds, because we wanted to talk about hemp oil and basically the things that, well, cure cancer. I mean, that's the topic of discussion today, isn't it? So hopefully Rick will be able to get connected by American Freedom Radio in just a few seconds. And just... for the moment, we have a caller. Area code 818, you're on the air. We just need your first name and what state you're calling from.
Are you talking to me, Wendy, here in Venice, California? Hi, how are you? And how's...
That's Wendy, is it?
Wendy, yes. Ian's friend. Ian's internet friend.
Yeah. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. I'm enjoying your show very much. Thank you so much for sharing this information.
Great.
And I just, somebody recommended on the chat line here that I call in. And I just want to say I really, really am so afraid of people drinking water out of plastic. That's the big deal. You mentioned it. And I just think it's a horrible problem on so many levels. And the solution, I'm very solution oriented. And I just say, eat watermelon. Melon filled with water, naturally filtered, naturally sweetened. I can't believe people spend so much money buying flavored water, fruit flavored water, when they could just be eating the fruit. So I really upped my.
Huh? No, but seriously, it's a good idea. Cut out the blimmin' middleman.
Exactly. So anyway, that's my new promotion. Time to be container free, and it will help. help the world on so many levels.
Yeah, you know what? And I think that's a good idea as well, because I think that humanity should not be contained, and so hence it's a good idea to be container free. Wendy, thank you very much for your call. And we now have Rick Simpson with us. Rick, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're coming up loud and clear, brother. Great to be back with you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much again for just, you know, putting out good information.
Thank you, Wendy.
Good for you guys, both of you. Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Wendy, for calling in. Okay, switching gears then. Rick Simpson, welcome to the show. We want to just quickly give a quick capsule in these final few minutes of the broadcast about hemp oil and its effect on cancer. So, Ian, if you have anything you'd like to ask or get Rick to explain specifically, go for your life.
Yeah. This is an honor again, Rick. We spoke once before. I'm trying to get some funds together so I can finish iCureCancer.com, the documentary part two, so I can come out and see you. If not, Vinny said that he can probably hook you and I up on a Skype thing and we can record it that way, worst case scenario. But I was good. It's ironic that we're able to get a hold of you because you were going to be one of my last points about the hemp oil. You made an amazing documentary called Run from the Cure, which I refer to people all the time. How you were basically ousted by the Canadian government. You did all the right things to try and get the right people to realize that, hey, we've got something that works here. Then you found out, like Dr. Royal Raymond Rife did, and many other people that came up with cancer cures over the years, they don't want them. But you've discovered, and maybe you can give us, the listeners, in a nutshell, what hemp oil does for people that have cancer.
Well, basically, it does everything. It's the only sensible treatment that I know of for cancer. I mean, beyond eating good food and all the rest of it. But, I mean, if you have a serious cancer, the ultimate answer is the oil. There's no question. I mean, what the medical system is doing to people with their chemo and radiation, that's just ultimate madness. And where, if you go on the internet today, I mean, there's so many video clips up there, you know, detailing, you know, what this oil has done for people. You know, it is the ultimate medicine. I don't care what you have, what disease, take the oil. If the oil doesn't work for you, you're probably never going to find anything that will. You know, this is the greatest healer, you know, in the world, and it's the greatest healer in nature, and it's harmless, non-addictive. We have to be insane not to be using this medicine.
And it's all about the cannabinoids, right?
Oh, yes, that's the whole thing, and this is what I've been trying to pound through people's heads, you know. My process is very simple.
No pun intended.
No, but I mean, all I'm doing, I'm just taking a good solvent, and I'm simply washing the medicinal resins off the hemp plant. Then I'm filtering them, and then I'm boiling the resin off, and that leaves you with the essential oil, which is truly, it's like a thick grease. The resins, when they get cooler, they're like a thick grease because they're resin. But that is the most medicinal aspect of the hemp plant. You know, some people go on about chlorophyll and all this nonsense. Well, good luck with the chlorophyll. But I'm after the resin, and that's what's killing the cancer and healing all these other diseases, and there is just no medicine on earth like it. And in a very short time, brother, you know, they can't stop this. It's coming out. The people are going to have their medicine. And as far as I'm concerned, the hell with these governments. They're not representing us. It's time for a huge change in this planet.
No,
stop it, because it's literally coming out of the ground.
That's right. Grassroots as they come, brother.
Yeah. Let me ask you real quick, Rick. Now that California and I think a number of other states have legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes, is there places that you can just go and buy this hemp oil?
Well, oh, yes, in the States, there's quite a few of the dispensaries. They're all selling what, you know, the RSO now. Thanks to Jack Herer. I mean, Jack was the one that hung that term on the oil himself. And one night I was talking to Jack, and I said, you know, he started calling it Rick Simpson oil. And I said, Jack, I said, look, it's hemp oil. And he came back at me, and he said, well, aren't you Rick Simpson? And I said, okay, Jack. Well, you couldn't argue with Jack Herer. But right. From what I understand, it's one of the hottest-selling commodities in America right now.
Wow. Okay, so that's good to know, because I've had somebody ask me recently if, because I always recommend your documentary and hemp oil, but I say yeah, I'm not sure where to get it. I don't know where to get it legally.
Well, there's a problem here, though. I mean, there's so many people manufacturing the oil in so many different ways. You know, the method we showed people was very simple, down to earth, take a rice cooker, you know, some solvent, make your own medicine. And it works wonderfully. But you got so many people, they turned it into a racket now. I mean, there are good people out there that do produce good medicinal oils, and they're healing people left and right. But there are also people out there that are making lower-grade oils and calling them the Rick Simpson oil, and the public are being duped into buying them. And that has become a real concern to me. You know, to me, when you look at medicine, it's all about purity. The more powerful, the better. And my oils have been tested, you know, right in Hebrew University in Jerusalem by the very top experts in this field. And they always hit into the 97-98% range. I don't know of anybody else's oil that goes into that range. And that's the range that's needed for medicine.
Is there a way to find out that we're getting yours, that good type, and not some other type?
Well, you know, you can almost tell by the effects of it. You know, I smoke pot, so it's no big deal to me. But, I mean, all I do, I take a little bit of that oil, and I put it on a cigarette paper, put a little bit of tobacco with it. And when I take two puffs off of good oil, I'm in the bathroom, my eyes are running, I'm coughing up my guts, because this is what it does to you. The most powerful oils do this, and that's what I look for. And then usually, if you eat the oil, within about 45 minutes, you start getting this very heavy, sleepy effect. You know, and that's exactly what you want for healing. The oil's telling you to go to bed. And sometimes people fight that feeling, you know, because they don't understand it. And that causes anxiety. So I tell people, look, just relax and go with it. You're taking the most harmless medication on earth. You know, you're not going to die from this. This is not pharmaceuticals. So it's more of a matter of just relaxing.
Some sheriff one time called into his dispatch, and him and his wife had just eaten these really, really strong cookies, and he says, I'm really afraid that we're both going to die because everything seems to be going really, really, slow? Really slow.
I can believe it, Vinny. I can believe it, brother. You know, people are so naive about this subject, and they think it's going to do them harm. You know, my God, this is the safest medicine on earth. You know, worldwide, thousands of people die from aspirin every year. You know, but this hip medicine kills no one.
Look at the warning labels, okay? Ever look at the warning labels on pharmaceutical drugs? It's like debilitating stomach cramps, holes in your brain, liver failure, or whatever. Then you have a look at the warning signs and the dangerous things that weed can do for you. You feel sleepy and possibly hungry.
Hey, let me. No, I mean,
we've come to the end of the broadcast. So, guys, I'd love it if you could just quickly plug your websites. And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. But if you have time after this as well, after every show, we have a conversation with the diehard listeners on Skype. So, if you want to join us there as well, if you have some free time, you're more than welcome. So, just go ahead and plug your websites there, gentlemen.
Well, my name is Rick Simpson, and the website we have is called phoenixtears.ca. And there you'll find information on how you can produce your own medicine and how you should take it, the dosage, everything. So by all means, if you have an illness, please go there and find the cure.
Right on. I'm Ian Jacklin. You can go to ianjacklin.com. And then the main site for the cancer is icurecancer.com. Well, there's plenty of videos and information, and you can get a copy of my documentary, IcureCancer.com, which explains the difference between alternative and Western methods.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. And also, ladies and gentlemen, if you are keen to join the After the Show Vinny Eastwood chat, you can go to the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, put your Skype name in there, and I'll add you as a contact to my list for the Vinny Eastwood social network. And we normally have a conversation for a couple of hours after the show, and it's not recorded. We're just a whole bunch of different people from all over the world as truthers getting together, just having a conversation, just because we can. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening.